It's like I'm having the most beautiful dream and the most terrible nightmare all at once.
Hey, you. Yes, I mean you, dear listener. Thank you. Thank you for listening to this Waro Desho podcast. We're so happy to have the pleasure of your company today. If you've listened to us before and like our show, you might be wondering how you could support us, since we won't take your money. This podcast will continue to be free, but if you'd like to show your appreciation, please consider leaving us a rating and review on iTunes, as those help our discoverability. If you don't use iTunes, that's fine too. You can follow us and like and share our content on SoundCloud, YouTube, and Twitter. Additionally, we love getting your feedback, positive or negative. Tweet us at WaroiDesho or email us at WaroiDesho@gmail.com. Whether or not it gets read on the show, I can assure you, we all read every tweet and email you send us. And once again, dear listener, we thank you so much. Now please, enjoy the show. Okay, I think everything is in order. I'm going to check. Do the obligatory technical stream check just to make sure everything is looking okay. And it is. So, hello everyone. It is I, the Subtle Doctor. Very nice to meet you visually, sort of. It's Waro Desho, the stream of thought, live on stage for your glorious viewing pleasure. And to my left is the artist formerly known as Shadan. It appears that I'm going to be going it alone, because Sir not appearing in this podcast is the only other co-host that I have.
Sorry, nope, you're wrong. What's up, ladies and gentlemen? How are we all doing?
Oh, boy. I see
you. This is probably the first time I've had a video like of me out speaking where I'm not actually yelling about fighting games. So this is a fresh experience for me.
Mm-hmm.
Although, admittedly, this is the worst chat roulette I've ever been on.
I apologize. Go in a
second. Nah, it's fine. You're not drawing penises or anything like that, so it's okay.
Yet.
There's still time. We've got about an hour and a half yet before the dicks start flying.
Well, hey, it's banana fish, right? That will be...
It would be topical.
It would be topical. So how are you doing?
How's it going? It's Friday evening. I have a beer in hand, and I'm going to talk about a show that is not Darling in the Franxx for fucking once in my miserable life. Holy shit.
Let's go ahead and get this out of our system, because we've talked so much Franxx, and I mean, I feel like every episode we could just be like, this show is not like Darling in the Franxx for these reasons. But I mean, obviously it's tremendously better show, but just for now, and then we'll put a moratorium on it. I just want to say, thank Christ we're watching a different show.
Well, I will drink to that, my friend. Cheers.
Kanpai.
I'm getting in the Hobgoblin product placement here, folks. They're going to pay me all, you know, the YouTube bucks, and probably also mean we'll end up, you know, having the stream banned, but hey, if Red Letter Media can get away with it, I can too. Thank you very much.
Sanrio, don't look. Don't look in the corner there. Okay. So we're here to talk about Banana Fish. It's Stream of Thought Live.
The very first streamed Stream of Thought. Like, we're breaking new ground here.
It's true. And as such, things might be a little rocky. We want to, like, count on you guys to, you know, keep us informed if the stream goes wonky, like, or you can't hear someone or whatever. This is very new for us. No safety net. We've done a couple tests, but, like, but yeah, this is it. This is the real deal. We're taking Bill O'Reilly's words to heart. We're doing it live.
Exactly. I mean, we are probably a bad podcast, so it would make sense for it to be probably a bad live stream.
Oh, it's going to be worse. It's going to be so much worse. People are going to see like the magic of your editing. It's going to be like, God, Doc is like a stuttering fool who just like launches into thoughts and then abandons them.
Well, it's okay. I've already established myself as a raging alcoholic by drinking on video for the very first time that we've actually done it. So don't worry. We're breaking new, better, and worse ground simultaneously. You know, we're covering all the bases here. But as Doc has rightly asserted, folks, if anything does go awry with the stream, such as the audio quality, the video quality, or if, you know, some local scrote bag from my neighborhood is coming behind me and is, you know, about to hit me with a baseball bat, please feel free to chime in. This will be interactive. But please also don't get me doxed while you're at it. I would very much appreciate no doxing. I've had enough run-ins in the police in my time. I don't want any more.
Hear, hear. I should tell the story one day about how I was almost arrested. But with that to
you?
Turn,
we'll of say... all of all people, you.
Yeah.
You.
Oh, yeah. Like... I've ridden in the back of a cop car cuffed and was taken down to the station.
Was it a case of mistaken identity? We can't
do this here.
Okay, you're right.
we have to try to keep it. Okay, so one of the many things that we have, Shadon and I, discussed about Stream of Thought is, you know, they're getting pretty long now. We've done a number of 2-hour episodes covering a 22-minute piece of animation, so we want to try to streamline this. And we also wanted to further distinguish it from our normal brand of show, which is sort of the heavily edited variety show type thing. So we thought, hey, a live stream, because that's entirely the opposite of what I just said.
It's new for us. That's the way to describe it.
So we hope you enjoy it. Give us feedback on what you think we need to figure out. Normally the introductions probably won't be this long, but... I thought a little bit of a preamble would be necessary.
We're getting it out of our system.
Mm-hmm. So let's do our usual dance and what? Okay, first live show, and I have the wrong window up. let's talk about the creatives involved with. You know, no. Actually, before we do that, before we talk about the who's. Let's just clarify for the audience our own perspective coming into this. I think it's the same for both of us that, like, I myself have never read Banana Fish. I have no experience with the manga or the mangaka. And it's just a totally fresh work for me. I'm judging it on its own merits. And, like, yeah, I mean, I think that will be interesting. There will be other resources that people can reach out to and find, like, oh, yes, okay. I want to see how it stacks up with the source material or whatever. But but this will be taking a look at just the visual production, just the anime, and judging it as a standalone work. So we won't really be able to comment on its faithfulness or non-faithfulness as an adaptation.
Sorry.
Yeah. Go, man. now that they're re-releasing Banana Fish, I mean, we can amend that. You know, I could very well go out and pick up that manga, but I think it's really long, though, which is a deterrent.
I mean, finishing my lesbian experience with loneliness took me a week when it should have taken me an hour, so... Yeah, I'm going to put that one on the back burner for a while now, but Yeah, my knowledge of Banana Fish basically starts and ends with its reputation as just being really good.
Mm-hmm.
And that pretty much is the primary reason why I said to Doc, right, okay, we're not watching any more shit. At least not for the time being, right? I'm burned out on shit. So we need to watch something that at least we feel is probably going to be good based on its reputation. Like, no original works, no, you know, not going, you know, cold on this stuff. We need to have something that we have some knowledge of prior to this.
Mm-hmm.
And this is why we've ended up picking it. So hopefully that holds true and that it does live up to the reputation the manga has garnered for itself. I hope.
Yes. Now, I did know a few things about it. I did know, like Zapprinfro points out in the chat, that it is very gay. I was aware of that going in. I also knew it was a cool crime drama. And, I mean, call me a basic bitch if you will. A basic boy. But I love crime dramas. I love mafia stories so much.
Mm-hmm.
And I love anime. And so when you get an anime crime drama, an anime, whether it's like a police procedural or from the mm-hmm. criminal side, like 91 Days or Gungrave, like I eat that shit up. I love it. And so, like, I've seen in a couple different reviews that, like, oh, so Banana Fish is great, but you won't be blown away by the twist because they're pretty genre standard for mafia stories. And I'm just like, yes, mm-hmm. yes, grab hands, yes.
Whoa, careful. No grabby hands. We talked about characters who have grabby hands before, and we know we don't like. But I'm in agreement. Like, I mean, 91 Days is probably the comparable anime entry that I've seen. You know, someone who basically hasn't watched shit for his entire life as far as anime goes. I'm still behind on everything. And yeah, 91 Days was very standard. Like, you know, the plot twists, the way that the story went, the characters. It all felt pedestrian, quote-unquote. And I'm saying that with quote-unquotes because that doesn't mean that it was bad. It was really good. It was slick. It was a really really well-done piece of entertainment. So when people say, you know, Banana Fish has got, like, you know, the same standard plot lines going through it, common to a lot of crime fiction, I'm like, okay, I'm game.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see how it goes. It's not a question of, you know, repeating the same old stuff, so it's just how well it does it, like how well honed it is.
Absolutely. Originality, overrated. Execution mm-hmm. is king, IMO. But okay, now let's talk about... You need to see Gungrave, by the way. Can I just say, we need to watch it.
Everything else.
It's right, well, it's so good. It's so good.
Well, I do have this handy, so if you just give me 2 seconds, I'll write this down.
All right. While you're writing it down, let me just disseminate some information here.
Yeah,
So this is a Studio MAPPA show. And you might remember Studio MAPPA for that gigantic breakout 2016 success, Yuri on Ice. Anyone remember that show? That was a good show. I like that show.
I have to say, like, when I first saw Ash, I was like, wait a minute. Where have I seen him before? let me stroke my beard and Oh, yeah, that's right. He looks like Yurio. Like, now, of course, the manga precedes Yuri on Ice by a couple of decades, so that's obviously
The character designs have been updated and modernized as well.
Oh,
they're not totally, like, drawn straight from the comic or anything.
All right, fair enough, then. Maybe that's more intentional. I don't know, but mm-hmm. I thought, this does seem familiar somehow. And, well, now I know.
For me, MAPPA is a studio I like very much. They first came into my consciousness with the, like, Bahamut anime based on the card game. I think it's Bahamut Genesis, was it?
I only know Hearthstone and maybe a posh, you know, Uno.
I don't know. this is an anime Uno, right? And you know, Cheryl's voice actress is voice acting the draw four, as you do, the wild. but no, so, and they did, was it last year that the sequel to that came out? Virgin Soul Bahamut? That was pretty good. And the Garo. The Garo animations as well I really liked. Based on a tokusatsu property Garo. But there's, especially that first Garo, the animation, is really fucking good. But, you know, Yuri on Ice and now Banana Fish. We have Hiroko Utsumi directing this wonderful show. You may know this person from Kyoto Animation. She's a Kyoto Animation alumnus and bringing all that experience from things like K-On! And Hyoka and Haruhi to this production. And she is a reportedly a big fan of the romance in Banana Fish. So that could lead to some interesting things as we'll get into, because this is not a straight, like, immediately from the first episode, even though the plot details I don't think change very much, there are some things that are different.
Some modern touches, yeah.
Mm-hmm. We'll talk about that. We have to now talk about Hiroshi Seko, who you may remember as screenwriter from Darling in the Franxx.
Say it. But
a screenwriter for some decent episodes of that show. And
decent.
Mm-hmm.
Decent. Mm-hmm. Are we talking relative? No. No, let's move on.
Mm-hmm.
We're not talking about that piece of shit for at least another couple of days, and then we're going, right, you get my point.
So, but Seko has done, you know, his series composition credit for this, and he's done a lot of other things that I really like. Mob Psycho 100. Kabaneri, Attack on Titan, Ajin. It's been in a lead creative role. And some things that I haven't seen, like Seraph of the End, but that I've been curious about. It looks like
Never heard of it.
Like kind of trashy, but like fun. Yes, we can.
I'm down some garbage.
But Grizzly, you're right, Grizzly. We cannot escape from the trash. That is absolutely the case.
We're trying.
But you mentioned the character designs, and you know, if you Google the manga, you'll see that they're quite different than the anime. I don't really like it when people use the word cartoony to describe character designs, because that seems incredibly generic to me, but like I'm struggling to come up with another word to describe the old designs. Thank you, Zap. Seraph of the End is very trashy. It's suspicions confirmed.
Animated, perhaps, like, you know, energetic. I mean, I'm merely not thinking of anime here. I'm thinking of, like, you know, the old Looney Tunes, Tom and Jerry, etc. You know, there's a lot of movement and such. Like, is that the kind of thing you're thinking of?
No, just as a general look. Because, like I said, I haven't read any of it. I've just really looked at a couple pictures of the character designs. But the new ones are Akemi Hayashi designs. And she, let's look at her character design. Oeuvre has done character designs on these Angelique OAVs. And the one that actually, that now that I read it, I'm surprised did not hit me over the head with similarity, is she did the character designs for Dokusei, the movie. And a movie I haven't seen, but has come highly, highly recommended to me.
Let me add that one. Well, I've got the whiteboard here. Let me add that one to the list,
okay,
too.
It's another...
There's many reasons I brought this with me today, folks, and it's not just for visual gags.
So that one is another boys love romance. And a lot of people, it came out the same year as Yuri on Ice, and one Jimmy Gnome said that it was actually the superior gay boy romance. So there you go. I am firing someone else's hot take at you. There's a little anime called Fruits Basket that people remember that very fondly. She did the character design to Fruits Basket. Oh Jesus Christ, now I'm sad because
I knew it. Like, when you start looking at stuff like this stuff, it is like playing Minesweeper, and sometimes you will land on that mine.
Oh, man.
Throw it out there. Tell us the turkey. Tell us where they cocks it up.
Peacemaker Kurogane.
I've not seen that, but I'm going to take that your expression right now, like, if you're a balloon, you'd be deflated. You really do look like you do look like you're dying a little.
Now, let me be fair. No, don't do that. No, let me be entirely fair about Peacemaker. So I watched it a long time ago. It's a very long time ago. I was kind of a different person, and so that may have influenced how I felt about how the story turned out, which honestly I just can't remember the details of. I just remember my reaction to it being pretty negative. And also, the problem with it was not the character designs. In fact, that's what drew me to it. Like, this was back in the day, to show you how far removed we are from the moment I watched it. This is when I picked out anime based on, like, key art and character designs alone. So I was samurai, they look cool. And they did look cool.
That's a bad idea.
Apparently, so Zaprinfro says that she was ex-Gainax, which I see because she has a Diebuster credit for character animation.
Oh, okay.
And she is one of Ikuhara's... the prehistoric times zap. Yes, very
yeah,
old.
That's when
thank you.
That's when Doc was getting his anime from, you know, cave painting, you know, deep in the Pleistocene.
Me and Plato hanging out watching the first anime.
Isn't that basically Ferme Rome?
Yeah,
well,
pretty much.
Really, that's Rome rather than Greek, yep. But close enough.
My biography. Simultaneous drink. All right. So
we timed that perfectly.
We did. We're good. We've done this together a few times, maybe. All right. So, Shadon, will you regale us with a brief summary of what you have just watched? Banana Fish Episode 1. A perfect day for a banana fish.
With pleasure, my friend. So, a lot happens in this episode, which is probably the most, like, you know, silly thing to say, but, like, for an opening episode, like, it's very fast-paced, possibly a bit too much maybe for my taste, I don't know. I get the feeling that maybe this is something the manga handled better because it's something that you more deliberately read slowly. I don't know. But anyway, we open in Iraq, the most bestest holiday destination on the planet. So this is off to a flying start here. Got a couple of US soldiers, you know, hanging around the campfire, and they're saying, you know, we're going to be going back in 3 days' time. And I'm like, well, you had to tempt fate, didn't you? You had to go and say it like 3 days and I get to go back. And I'm honestly surprised that someone just didn't literally, you know, pull out a photo of, like, you know, their girlfriend and their son at this point. So one gentleman whose name is Griffin comes back and he reaches for one of the rifles that are there at the campfire. And what follows is he cocks the rifle and starts shooting everyone. Another gentleman named Max manages to disable him by shooting him in the legs with his own pistol, but Griffin has, at this point, has already killed three of the soldiers present. And when he's been disabled, Max, and his colleague come over and ask, "What the hell are you doing? Why did you shoot all of us?" And Griffin just responds with two words: "Banana fish." Now,
cryptic.
This is. Also, what on earth are you... Never mind. I'll leave you to...
This is my son, my good future son, Trunks. Say hi, Trunks.
Fair enough. I suppose this is as much for his education as anyone else's. So, yeah, banana fish is the
it's
word...
It's a scary story. He needed to be with me while you told it.
So, banana fish, as it will turn out later, is not actually the... You know, the thing that he wants for his last meal before he gets sent to the executioner's chair for doing that. This will have a different meaning at a later point. And then we get to New York. And the opening bits of this New York sequence just made me think that we were going to be watching an anime version of Deus Ex. I really thought we were going to, like, you know, jump to the docks and just find Denton there saying, you know, that the terrorists have blown up the Statue of Liberty. But that's not the case, I'm afraid.
We didn't ask for that, so...
No, we did not. No, we did not. So, Ash, this lad here who looks like Yurio, is walking through an alleyway and he finds a gentleman who is dying, bleeding out. And this gentleman also, as he's dying, hands him something and says, "Banana fish." Now, this isn't revealed at that particular point, but does come about later in the episode.
Mm-hmm.
And as it turns out, two of Ash's own henchmen, because he's a gang leader, had actually, you know, beaten this guy half to death. And then fully to death, because he does die later. Like, you know, it's a steady progression. Just starts off like half dead and dead. And Ash berates him, you know, for going against his orders because he didn't want them to do that. But it turns out that this was on the orders of someone named Dino. Dino also goes by the nickname of Pap. Because, as always in Wario Desho tradition, we do somehow inexplicably link all of our fucking anime together.
Another Papa.
We can't help it. Every single thing we watch is linked to the next in some way, just by a common character's name, usually. And it's starting to get pretty scary, I'm not going to lie. So, Ash, of course, thinks to himself, right, I'm going to go and find out why Dino overruled me, and he goes and visits him. A couple of discussions here and there between the characters. We get an idea of the power play here between Dino and Ash, because they are supposedly meant to be equals, but there's a lot of body language in this actual episode that says very differently, particularly of how Dino approaches him. Like, Ash might be a free spirit, he might play by his own rules, but there's also very evidently, you know, a lot of behavior on here that suggests quite the opposite, at least in terms of his relationship with Dino. We also meet one of Dino's henchmen. Was his name Marvin?
It wasn't. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Marvin.
Who is a gay, but not that Marvin gay. Also, I think, by the way, that, like, so now you've got me wanting to call him fucking Yurio. Ash. Ash thinks that, you know, his group and Dino's group are equals. And I think he's sort of under a mistaken impression in that sense.
Yeah. Just it might very well actually be a thing for him that he desires but knows instinctively is not true. Because, to give you guys perspective...
He might believe it's true, but I mean, who knows?
Doesn't make it so, though.
You know, yeah, but it's speculating. But, like, he's definitely, yeah, like, the plaything of Dino, it would seem to me. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. It's no coincidence, by the way, that later in this episode we do see Dino stroking a cat. And this is not, as it turns out, a... you know, Ernest Blofeld reference from James Bond, but rather it is, you know, a metaphor for Ash himself. I mean, Ash links Wildcat, Dino's got a cat in his hand, he is Dino's pet. That is the, you know, the allegorical thing there, that's the metaphor for it. Not regressively, you know, the James Bond thing. Sadly. Maybe that'll happen to somebody. Next time, Ash. Next time. It's honestly, what? How do you keep doing these good impressions, Doc? It terrifies me. I mean, if you just cut your video feed out now and just had a clip of, like, you know, Dr. Claus stroking that fucking cat of his, I wouldn't believe it was anything different. I thought I'd be on, you know, Discord with Dr. Claus himself, which would be terrifying, but awesome. But fucking awesome. So, okay. After a bit, glossing over a couple of characters we're going to meet here. But after a bit, the item that Ash received from this dying gentleman looks like a bullet on a chain. So it looks like just a, you know, a piece of jewelry. But as all, you know, good bullets on chains are wont to be, it's also a capsule and it contains a white powder. So Ash, of course, is not rock stupid and he recognizes that there's a common element here. You know, the banana fish comment that was made by the dying man and also by Griffin. And at a back alley doctor that he knows who patches up his men, Ash asks him about the powder and asks him to find out what it is. A later scene introduces to Griffin, who, as it turns out, is actually Ash's big brother. Now, this is the common thread here, and this is the mystery conceit of the show thus far, which is, what is this this white powder here? It's not cocaine, it's not heroin, and it certainly sure as shit ain't personal non-bio. So, what is it? And what did it do to Griffin? How did he get, like, you know, how did he get hold of it? Why is it now suddenly here stateside when it was previously in Iraq? So, if there's one thing I'll say just right now is that opening episodes of shows, generally speaking, need a good hook to get you in. And this has a couple, actually, as it happens. And one of them is, of course, the central mystery. I mean, we have the human factor of, you know, it destroying Ash's older brother, so it's relevant to him. It's not just some random schmuck that he doesn't know or care about. So that's a really good start, actually, for the show to get you engaged. It's probably one of the more intriguing opening episodes I've seen since Yatman Knight.
That's high praise. That was a fantastic opening episode.
Yasmin Knight's opening is best than Banana Fish's, but Yasmin Knight's opening was literally the textbook example of how you do it. So being relative, this is still pretty good by its own measure. So this is all going on. Dino, of course, knew that the gentleman in question who had died had this capsule. So he obviously knows more than he's laying on to the audience, which is to be expected. I mean, we're not going to, you know, find out what this super wonder drug is at this particular point. It's not going to turn out to be, you know, God, what was that thing from Scanner Darkly? Crap. I should remember this. I am a Philip K. Dick fan. Fuck it, you know what I mean? It's the red tablets.
Right.
But yeah, it's the yeah. So anyway.
I can't think of it either. So, old man brain, Dino, dad brain.
Dino, of course, you know, asks Ash at some point, did you get anything from the band? And Ash, of course, just fobs him off. But Dino's not rock stupid and decides, okay, I'll have his room turned over. Doesn't find anything, of course, when his henchman gets back. And Dino, of course, still pretty savvy. This guy's pretty up there. I mean, he's the Baron Harkonnen of this particular show right here. He's, you know, he's got a lust for younger lads. And on top of that, he's also actually pretty genre savvy. So he knows full well that Ash has actually hidden it somewhere. So he decides, okay, the best plan I've got then in that case is to go have Marvin turn Ash over, beat the crap out of him and get the information out of him, because he knows full well that that capsule's gone somewhere. And Marvin already is a bit of a hate boner for Ash, as it happens anyway, because Ash just takes the piss out of him constantly. What next? So, completely separately as it happens, there are a couple of characters who arrive in New York doing a documentary of sorts, a photographic documentary for an article on New York gangs.
Can I just say, like, when they...
Oh, go on.
When they came in, I was so like, who the hell, like, what are they doing? Like, I thought I thought they were undercover cops, and I was like, you dudes are the worst undercover cops I've ever
I laughed my ass off when those three entered the bar. They could not have looked more out of place if they were Hell's Angels in a fucking nunnery, seriously. But that was deliberately amusing, though. I really enjoyed that.
Yeah,
so
I did too.
These three include a young lad named, is it Eiji or Aiji? My Japanese. Eiji?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, fair enough. I mean, my Japanese is shocking, so I apologize profusely to anyone of, you know, the Nippon dialects who I have offended.
Eiji Okumura.
Sorry.
No, you're good. You're good. Eiji Okumura. And
That's good.
I don't know who... I don't have the names of his associates. Did they give their names?
I think they did, but ultimately it doesn't really matter because it ultimately doesn't really matter because the person that we're interested in for the story is Eiji.
Mm-hmm.
So they're all at this bar, and they're here, of course, to meet Ash. Ash, you know, he fobs them off a little bit. He is very cocksure of himself, but at the same time, he doesn't want to really, you know, have his face photographed. He only wants to answer kind of indirect questions. Eiji, as soon as he spots him, is infatuated with him. I mean, if you've got a gaydar, it's going on. So that happens, and then there's a couple of scenes in which they interact, in which Eiji actually shows a surprising amount of confidence for someone who is, on the face value of this first episode, Ash is polar opposite. Like, Ash is pure confidence. Ash is, you know, brass balls, I don't care, you fall in line behind me, you do as I fucking say. And Eiji is, well, he's very, you know, typical reserved, introvert, high school kid. You know, he would never be caught, like, you know, out after 10 o'clock, after curfew. He wouldn't be, you know... I mean, he would think that a sugar rush is illegal as far as, you know, overdosing goes. He's pretty plain and straight, you know. He's a well-rounded, nice lad. And he's, also he's, very boring.
Yeah, he's a good boy.
He's a good boy.
He gets mistaken for a kid. He looks very young. But he's 19. Yeah.
He's actually older than Ash's apples. Ash, by the way, is 17. And he's already got all of the gangs in New York under his control, apart from, of course, Dino.
Stone Cold Killer.
They make a very specific mention that that's including all of the gangs of different ethnicities in his, mm-hmm, as well. Do you think, you know, I mean, if you play GTA, even then, like, you know, they had, like, you know, gangs drawn around ethnic lines, and that's true in real life. So, Eiji, of course, pretty smitten with him. There's a scene in which, you know, Ash is shown to be very proficient with a .357 Magnum, and Eiji, of course, says, can I hold your gun? gun.
Yep.
I mean, there's this. I mean, well, it is a gay crime drama, so you can read into that a number of ways. Let's just hope that Ash is not firing blanks. So.
Oh God. I'll talk more about that when we get to our talking points.
For sure. So after that, though, Dino, of course, has decided, yeah, I'm going to send Marvin and his cronies in to go and work Ash over and tell me where the fuck my Coke is, or my not Coke, my Super Coke, whatever the banana super fish drug is.
Yeah.
Wherever my Super Whiz is. And
oh, should we point out the J.D. Salinger reference?
Oh, we should, yes, because, no, Banana Fish is not the name of the manga that the author came up with when they were roosting around in their fridge thinking what they wanted to eat. It wasn't quite that simple.
This was a short story that he wrote in 1948, published in The New Yorker, and I've not read the actual text, but we read a plot summary, and it's pretty fucking depressing, and it bears a lot of similarity. When Dr. Meredith talks about the legend of the banana fish in this, it's different. Like, he's not, when I first watched it, I was like, oh, he's just calling back the banana fish story here. But in the story, something quite different happens. It's about a war vet who has suffered some trauma and has like psychiatric disorder, has mental health problems, who has like a very weird conversation with a girl. I'm going to spoil this entire story for you. And they have a strange moment and they talk about the banana fish and he feels sad for them and she doesn't. And then he goes back into his condo where his wife is sleeping and takes his own life. I don't know if tonally that's like, you know, that is the canary in the coal mine, if you will, for this show. But I think it very well could be. So buckle up for some bad ends.
This visual novel is only going downhill. Yikes.
But I mean, I'm hopeful of how it will handle everything. I mean, it seems to have a handle on drama, if nothing else.
Yeah. So, while this is all happening in the bar, of course, Marvin and a couple of his fellow goons invade. And this is the point where the show just cranks it up to 11 immediately. Like, okay, it's been fast-paced so far, but we've had otherwise fairly simmering kind of drama-related stuff. A bit of power play between characters, understanding people's positions. But then, of course, like, you know, the guys invade the bar, start smashing it up, start kicking off with everyone, and Ash is just cutting through them like a hot knife through butter. It's not even funny how good he is at fighting. So while this is happening, IG is like, you know, his like exposure to this criminal underworld is actually quite gradual. I mean, I know that sounds strange that he's going to a bar where, you know, all these, you know, people are probably tooled up. But I mean to say, like, he literally has a fairly normal conversation, apart from, of course, asking to handle someone's gun. Wink, wink. And then next, you know, bar fight breaks out. You know, it's almost like it's the Wild West, but no one's playing one of those antique pianos in the corner. And then he's caught behind a bar and he's about to be knifed by someone, but then Shorty, Ash's, you know, friend, who's 10, I guess?
Shorter. No, okay, you're thinking, so Shorter is the purple mohawked fellow who is about his age that has a bike. The kid is Skip.
Skip, that was what I was thinking of. Sorry, I got the names.
Yeah, who, Skip by the way, Skip fucking rules. I will hear no, like, disparaging of Skip in this.
Yeah,
in this
I agree.
Venue.
I will skip your complaints about Skip.
In this right house, we appreciate Skipper.
I'll drink to that again, my friend. So, whilst this is going on, Skip and AG make out through a secret passage. They go out back to the street. But unfortunately, because it turns out one of Ash's gang members, who I think his name is Arthur,
That's correct.
Yeah, with the wild Dio haircut. He has it in for Ash as well, because Ash apparently shot off his fingers previously. Yeah, that's the thing that happened. Like, in case you were curious about, like, you know, how we should feel about our protagonist, this guy is chaotic, fucking neutral to the core. Certainly not good, that's for
cold,
sure.
A cold motherfucker, I think, is an appropriate way to describe him.
Yeah, so he's been feeding Marvin information and also setting up this, you know, attack on the bar. So he knew full well that that exit was there and was waiting for them.
Yeah, they've joined together. They're going to be a coup, right? Like, Marvin's been told to rough him up, and he will do that. He's been told to keep him alive, which he will technically do. He will walk away from a, you know, beaten and decrepit Ash, who Walter will then walk up, presumably, and, you know, put two in the back of his skull. And
yeah, sounds about right.
Yeah, that's the plan.
That's the plan. But, of course, AG's been swept up in all of this. So he gets, you know, spirited away into a car that's waiting with Skip, and they're taken away. And Ash, you know, after cutting through another couple of, you know, folks like he's fucking Jet Li or something like that. I mean, honestly, I felt like I was going to start hearing Papa Roach songs just for how good he was at fighting them off. Sorry to bring that particular old band up. I mean, you weren't a fan of the Limp Bizkit references I made previously, but I'm afraid that that's the music of my generation, my friend. Fuck. Sorry.
God damn it.
I got nothing. So
I've only got water here. I don't have... You can't do that to me right now.
I am terribly sorry. Excuse me while I enjoy this delicious ale. Right, anyway. Now that I've stopped rubbing salt into Doc's wounds, unfortunately, I mean, I should have been drinking tequila. Now, they, of course, are being taken away by car. Ash pursues on Shorty's motorbike. And it's been established early in the episode that Ash is a ridiculously good shot. So, from a long distance away of about 25 yards, if not more,
yeah,
he plucks one of the guys through the rear window of the car. And
Jack.
The guy was sat right next to Jack got Jacks. He got Jacks right through the skull. And AG is like there, sat right next to him, sees him, you know, bleeding everywhere. Raspberry jam is all over the upholstery. It's going to, you know, I mean, fuck, what was the name of that guy from Reservoir Dogs? The one who keeps appearing on those car insurance adverts. I should know this.
I'm, so it's Wolf, funny. His name was. I thought of Pulp Fiction. Not Reservoir Dog, the cleaner, the wolf.
Oh, that's who I was thinking of. Whatever. Again, like, I'm being,
it's funny. It's Marvin that gets killed in the car in that one. and yeah,
I was crossing my Tarantino over.
Harvey Keitel. I just, I want them next episode to take it to Harvey Keitel. The wolf.
I would be so happy with that. But yeah, it's gushed, like, blood's gushed everywhere. I just, like, you know, well, his innocent young mind has just been shattered. I mean, Christ, I mean, I get the impression he would flake out watching his first R-rated movie. If he turned Google Safe Search off, he would be a gibbering wreck.
I mean, he's having to kind of manage himself by saying, okay, this is really happening. Stay here. Stay in the moment. Because I think he mentally just wants to, like, disassociate. Totally escape. Yeah. But I think he just knows that is the... will not ensure his survival if he does that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I am taking the mickey here, but at the same time, it's entirely reasonable for someone who comes from that particular walk of life. I mean, he's from Japan after all, so had a low crime rate. You know, they've got different problems over there.
I mean, it's like he was saying, Tim, like, you're carrying a real gun in public, you know? Not allowed. Not allowed in Japan. They only have replicas.
And they do manage to get away, though, the rest of them, because, of course, at that point they've got out of Ash's range. Drive off, a couple of phone calls made, Ash pursues on the motorbike, episode over. That's it.
Yes. Whew. Boy, a lot happened, right? A whole bunch.
Yeah, exactly.
I think
exactly.
So someone said in the chat, it was Mirror, said that this episode was the entire first volume of the manga.
And usually, surprise me.
And typically, like in adaptations I've seen, those episodes will stick closer to chapters than entire volumes. So it's a lot of material.
I mean, by comparison, because I've watched and also read the manga, Land of the Lustrous, the season of that is 12 episodes, and that covers just 5 volumes. And when I say that, I actually mean more 4.5.
Mm-hmm.
Broadly speaking, it's 3 episodes per volume. And so if you're fitting a single volume into an episode, I did mention before this episode felt very fast-paced, and that almost was to its detriment a little bit, because a lot happens. It feels like you're trying to keep up. Like, we're going from one scene to another, and everything is important. I'm not saying that, you know, in other shows that, you know, there would be dead air or anything like that, but it's a question of, you know, scale and relativity here. Like, some scenes in some other shows, like, you can just kind of kick back and enjoy the moment of just a brief, quiet character drama. Not in this one. You have to be, you know, buckled up, sat the fuck down, shut the fuck up, and watching throughout the entirety of it. So I have to say, like, with my instruction there, I probably did gloss over some bits and bobs here and there.
That's okay. We want to try to keep the summaries now. They've been very detailed on past Stream of Thoughts. I think our goal would be to try to streamline those as much as we can. So we will transition from our previous verbosity into more of an economy of words. So we'll gloss over.
I'll do my best.
Same here. I'm gonna hold my hand up. But yeah, okay. No, we'll gloss over things, but people in the chat will help us out, and people on Twitter will ask us questions. Yep, yeah. Mm-hmm. Stream of Thought. We'll streamline Stream of Thought.
I see what you did there.
All right, so talking points. Part of the new format is, instead of, and I tried to keep quiet as much as I could during the summary, so instead of, like, breaking down every little scene, we want to each talk about three big things from the episode, and they could overlap. There could be some weeks where we have the exact same three things. And if you want to hear us talk about more stuff, like, get in the chat, get in Twitter, you know, ask away, and we can address that stuff as it comes up. But
for sure.
So my first talking point is related to what you were just saying. And I want to talk about the pacing of the show, because it was incredibly tight, like you said. It keeps you on your toes, but I don't think it actually gets too hectic. You know, you had mentioned that you thought, like, okay, this is possibly to the detriment of the show.
Possibly.
And I felt like it went right up to that line without going over for me. And I think, you know, my bias in this area could be that I am quite, I've seen a fair few, as I said, like, mafia story type stuff. And so I think maybe genre familiarity might have helped me kind of find some grounding there. Like, almost, like, you can almost kind of put these different characters in their roles just based on their visual design. So you're not, like, having to, at least I wasn't having to, like, process a ton of stuff in terms of, like, meeting all the new people. That wasn't part of it. Like, the tight pacing, as you said, was to do with transitions, location changes, picking up what is happening based on context clues in the conversations. You know, I mentioned I thought AG and his associates were undercover cops, because the first people they met, I think they were the police.
They were at a police station, yeah.
And so I was like, well, here, I mean, I guess they're undercover cops. I don't remember hearing this as part of the story, but okay, I'm going to go with it. But this could be, and media is hard, there's a fine line. This could be thought of, I guess, as the kind of extreme show don't tell. Like, you might think, like, you can go too far in terms of not having a show not say, like, hello there, we are here, the photographers for the magazine in Japan, to take pictures of the gang.
Yeah, that, you know, would be pretty dry, I'm not gonna lie.
Like, yeah, I mean, obviously there are better ways to do it, but
well, they did that in the actual episode, because they actually had, you know, Ash them, you know, who the hell are you guys, and, like, we are photographers. Like, Ash doesn't know. The police guy probably knew ahead of time because they were meeting him already. So again, good use of exposition there to deliver the role across. Get it from, what, you know, people who know to the people who don't in the story. And that keeps it efficient.
Totally. Totally. So that's my first talking point, is I was a real fan of the pacing. And, you know, there's a lot of material to cover, and people think that they're going to try to cover all of it. And if that's the case, then I hope that they do keep up the brisk pace by and large, because I was a fan of it.
Yeah. I think for me, I wouldn't say it was a black mark against the show, but I do get the feeling that because everything is important, super important, it's going to be a case of I fear I might miss something. That's going to be borne out over time. And, you know, one of the nice things about this new format here is if there is something that I am wrong on or that I missed out that people would feel is important for me to bring up, I would very much trust you guys to, you know, pipe in and say, yo, chat, you're wrong. You need to say this thing. So, yeah, please whisper my direction if I miss something. But maybe this is growing pains as well for me personally. So we'll see how things go, but I do feel like, you know, I was not so much struggling. I was just like, whoa, this is a bit bumpy here. This is like, you know, all over the shop. I'm switching from scene to scene very quickly. Like, you know, we've got hard cuts from like different times of day. There's no establishing shots usually of like locations. Literally like, okay, here we go. One location to the next. And that's it. But it's not terrible. I mean, at the end, like, you know, if the actual content is interesting, which it is, that's fine. But for me, it's like maybe stayed a little bit too much on the, you know, overly quick.
All right, before you get to your first talking point, I'm going to break in with
Twitter poll.
A Twitter poll. I'm going to put it on Twitter now and ask, were you a fan of the pacing?
Intense typing while we put a Twitter poll up on Twitter.
Yeah, woo! That's all right. Please proceed with your first talking point while I make the poll.
All right, so this is a technical element, but this would be the camera work and the animation. So there is, for me, like, they do a very good job in this episode, I think, of framing characters using particularly like how close they are to the camera to, you know, for particularly important or intense scenes. This is especially true in later on when we have Ash, like, you know, we get that close-up of him as he gets a revelation. One particular shot that I was very interested in was in the bar. Ash is sat at said bar, having a drink, because it's a bar. Surprise, surprise, he wasn't, you know, fucking reading the newspaper there. The bar itself is on a raised platform. And we have a shot here that has AG here and Ash here. AG is, like, down here. And Ash is a little bit higher up because of the platform, also because he's sat on a stool. And I really appreciate this camera work in this direction just for establishing the relationship as it stood at that moment in that, you know, he's literally looking up to the guy. Like, he idolizes him practically from the moment he sees him, mm-hmm. like, you know, can I play if you've got it, etc., etc. So that was some really good use of camera. I imagine that is probably lifted directly from the manga, to be quite honest, with that position. I mean, but it's not out at the moment because I'm a lazy bastard, but in Land of the Lustrous, like I did mention a lot of times about how they lifted certain important scenes and certain iconic visuals from the manga directly into the show. But that's good. That's part of what, you know, adaptation is about, is recognizing when you have quality content and just putting it in as is. You don't necessarily, you know, need to change everything just because you can do. So on top of that, like, the show's animation for the most part early on is very, it's not slow on its own, but it's slow. So I was like, when the fight actually kicks out, it's incredibly fluid, like fast cuts, quick pacing, you know, a lot of like movement from Ash, particularly, is kicking people out, roundhouse kicks, punching everything. So I was also, yes, Zap, they were definitely raising the that's great. I'm drinking Zap. That's the, don't you shake your head, you, I Mm. Fair enough. Thank you for the heads up on that, Zap. That's much appreciated.
I've heard people. So Zap talked about the original layouts. I've heard people say that they were kind of drab or washed out, and I don't know. I was kind of into them. Like, you know, the setting of the show. I don't know. Well, I shouldn't spoil. I shouldn't spoil talking points. Well, I'm sure one of us will talk about the setting. But in general, what did you think of the modernization of it? Like, the fact that... Were you aware that it was meant to be set in the 80s?
Not until you told me off cast. Now, I knew, of course, it was, you know, an adaptation of a previously existing manga that had been out of print for a while, so I could at least gather that it wasn't, you know, a new thing. Mm-hmm. But I do appreciate the attempts to modernize it a little bit with, you know, the introduction of smartphones. They actually use this as a plot point in the episode. Not a major one, mind you, but they do it because Ash tries to track Skip's phone via right. GPS, mm-hmm. which obviously would not have been a thing in the manga. Maybe they had like a location device. I'm doubtful of that because these are, after all, street kids as opposed to, you know, having the wonders of modern technology in their hand. So for me, I think that, you know, when you're translating something to a modern time, because it's not a period piece, like 91 days is a period piece. It's specifically around the mm-hmm. era of Prohibition. So that's why it was, you know, set on there. We didn't see, you know, Angelo, you know, whip out a fucking smartphone and post on his Instagram that he just murdered half the, you know, the mob family.
Good so, memory to pick out the name. I forgot.
I am surprised as you are, honestly, like that. I thought that would take me at least 5, maybe 10 more hours for me to remember. But yeah, no, I think that, you know, like when you get the opportunity to make changes like that that make sense in the story, but also make it more contemporary, it is certainly welcome. Because this is going to sideline into the other one, one of the other talking points I have, which I'll get to in a bit. But yes, this is a gay story. And if there's one thing that I have learned from, you know, meeting and talking with people who are LGBTQ plus online, is that social media, for all its sins, is actually, you know, very beneficial for connecting people. So I'm very curious to see if they'll make any more use of that. I mean, while it's not an adaptation, the transition from going from Persona 4 to Persona 5, where they made more use of social media to actually help fuel the plot, was actually very relevant. So I'm curious if, you know, the guys doing the adaptation of this are aware of the climate that we're now in and the kind of, you know, demographics that would be watching this and interested in it, and see if they're taking more advantage of, you know, firstly having, you know, your phone, and then, you know, seeing if they can make that relevant to the gay experience. I don't know. We'll see. But mm-hmm. I'm at least glad they've got that set as a foundation there, and they've actually already thought, so, okay, not only have we actually put smartphones in here, but we can also think of ways we can include them in the plot that don't detract significantly from the original material.
I'm curious if, you know, how do I say, that if technology and social networks will play any role, you know what I mean, at all? Like, or if the modernization will be as little as possible, details around the surface to not frustrate people, you know, maybe because the director is like, this is not meant to be an 80s story necessarily. I don't know. I mean, it's interesting. There's a lot of like things about Ash and his character that I find extremely intriguing, to see mm-hmm. where they'll go. But yeah, it was just like the only two kind of tip offs I had that the setting was not, you know, 80s New York was the phones, and then when AG talked about CSI New York, which also is a hilarious reference. I mean,
I am so
CSI. I'm like, wait a minute, this show didn't exist.
Doc, you have no idea how upset I was that when he said that, the guy who was in front of him, his colleague, didn't suddenly turn around and go, This is one of the benefits now of actually doing it on video, because I can do gags like that on the fly.
Oh my god.
The reason I'm not wearing my glasses is because small insights to my personal life. You can actually see what's on my monitors on the reflection of my glasses. And unfortunately, some people I follow on Twitter when I'm browsing on Twitter like to, you know, retweet the old titty. So not having that, thank you very much, just so people don't assume too much. And yeah, I know you're about to burst out laughing. You want to start laughing, you fucking do it.
I will resist.
Seriously, you'll be talking, and the next thing you know, I'll just be there, like, wearing my glasses, and I'll be fucking, you know, Skasha from Faith's granddaughter, dressed in a fucking swimsuit, you know, and it's going to be ridiculous. To be like, Shaz, Derek, what's wrong with you? It's just the people on my it's the people on my Twitter that I follow that have the problems, not me. I swear.
Keep telling yourself that.
And hand on heart,
man. Zap. Yes, there has always been CSI. You're right. it has always existed and will always exist in perpetuity.
It was on the same cave paintings I mentioned before. Just,
even after humanity is gone, CSI will continue in some form. Okay, so my next talking point then, now that we're done talking about bad crime shows, let's talk about a good crime show some more. So I want to talk about, I guess we'll get really into it here. I want to talk about Ash and the things that I find intriguing about where they could take his story. This is not a super like happy story. It's not going to be. I mean, his life has not been good, and I don't think it's gonna end well for him. If I had to, put my cards on the table here.
Did he smile even once during the episode? I had the feeling the answer is no, or at least there's a very strong possibility of a no.
He did. He smiled like when he was putting one over on Dino, and said that he didn't have the banana fish.
Ah, there we go.
He gave him that look that was just like, you know, ha, fuck you. So, but no, not in a tender way. And I think, like, so there was a really good Anime Feminist article about this first episode. Vry and Caitlin talked about it at length. And I think they make a lot of really good observations that, like, you know, stuff is in the episode and you can tease out their observations from only having seen the first episode. But I think because Vry at least has read the books, she's able to extrapolate better from the things that are laid out in that first episode. Like, and it's hard for me to, because I mean, there's just like so much other stuff going on, like we said, that it's hard. You don't have time to process fully. Like, okay, Ash was forced to be in porn videos when he was a kid.
Well, yeah, it's like I said before, though, like when Marvin makes that comment about, you know, Ash being in videos, I was fairly confident it was not his Let's Plays, you know. I didn't think he was starting a series of playing God of War, the modern one, and, you know, commentating over it. Yeah, exactly. Like, I could infer that much from it, that it was not, you know, the PG-13, you know, family-friendly variety of YouTube video.
Totally. And so Vry made the comment in her essay that, it wasn't an essay, but in her write-up, that, like, because of what happened, Ash has a lot of internalized self-hatred and internalized homophobia, despite him being a gay person. And I think, you know, we talked about off-cast how, like, maybe this show, despite it being an 80s piece in terms of when it was written, like, could be resonant with this, because I mean, you just hear so many marginalized people internalize the bias, the prejudice, the hatred that is directed against them. They, especially, you know, when you're young and it's hard to process that stuff healthily. You know,
yeah. And I mean, after all, Ash's only mentor/father figure that I'm aware of so far in the show, with the possible exception of the back alley doctor, is of course Dino. And we've already established what Dino's relationship with Ash is, in that Ash is his pet, not, you know, his son, surrogate son, his mentee, you name it. Nope, he's as much as a pet as the cat on his lap.
I'm very curious to see where this will go, you know, because Eiji is naive. He's very sweet. I think he strikes me as like a much warmer person. I mean, just from his conversation we get with Skip, you know, he seems quite a different person from Ash in terms of his personality. And like,
exactly.
Will he be able to soften Ash? Will will he be able to break through all those, you know, calcified walls that he's put up inside himself? Like, will he be able to get through that self-hate? And will Ash be able to, like, be intimate with another person?
Something to mention in reverse, though, is that, you know, sure, like, you know, going into... I mean, I've done it before when I was younger, not under the same context. I wasn't then kidnapped, thankfully. But I have been to, you know, bars and such when I was much younger, but I really shouldn't have been. And there is something, you know, intoxicating about the idea of going somewhere where you're not allowed. And, well, particularly in that time period, would you have not allowed to be if you were gay? And that is to be openly gay, you know, to embrace your sexuality. So there's a lot of metaphors and parallels you can already read into this here, you know, about the very acts of doing so. So as much as you might say, you know, that, you know, Ash is going to, you know, have his, you know, heart warmed up for once rather than being a lump of dead coal, Age is going to get something back as well. They're going to have, like, a middle ground in which they'll meet, in which they can, you know, be both intimate and soft and sweet. And also, again, you know, Ash will bring to the table that element of, you know, hard-edgedness, you know, resilience, strength, you know. So they will... I would expect, and I would hope, gain something both from each other, because they are very much the opposites, you know, two sides of different coins here. Mm-hmm. So that the lines are already fairly well drawn on how this will play out, or how you might expect it would play out, mind you. I mean, I'm sure there'll be curveballs along the way. But, you know, having Ash having someone, you know, he can be intimate with, someone he can let his guard down for 5 minutes with, and in turn, Agee will get back, you know, the ability to maybe, you know, become more confident in himself, more, you know, able, gain more agency, you know, maybe, you know, have some of that softness sanded away, because at the moment he's currently so, you know, he's so naive, so innocent, so sweet. Unfortunately, if he was in New York for, you know, a couple more days, regardless of what happened to Barron, he would have been devoured alive.
Yeah.
So, you know, they will both get something out of this. They'll both, funnily enough, kind of meet each other in the middle in a number of respects, both in terms of them, you know, changing their personalities over time, and also just, you know, growing to, you know, become closer to each other. That's how I see it turning out, mind you. And I'm sure people, you know, who in the chat who have read the manga are probably there, like, you know, I'm gonna smash the keyboard now and say, you're wrong, you're full of shit. But we'll see how it goes. We'll see.
All right, hit us with your second talking point.
Well, I was actually going to bring up the whole gay thing. Well, okay. that's already been discussed at death. So, God,
You got, well, I can throw mine out there if you need time,
please,
to think of another one. So it's related. This is related to what you were just saying. And it is, like, I think that the fact that this was written in the 80s is significant and important for people to keep in mind.
Yeah, I know where you're going with this.
Yeah, and so we talked about MAPPA and Yuri on Ice, right? And I don't think that this... I mean, this could be a hit and everything. It's not what I mean. But I don't think that the relationship between Ash and Agee, the romance, will be... I don't expect it to be, unless the director makes some changes, like, as textual. Because... from everything I've read and heard, again, not having read it myself, but from everything I've read and heard, like, it was way more common for, you know, manga dealing with this stuff in the 80s to code it, because for whatever reason, gay stories, boys love, yaoi wasn't, like, it couldn't be the sort of centerpiece of a story. It couldn't be the main focus like it can be today, or even, you know, recent times. This is what I read. And so it is part of this crime drama. And even though, like, having said that, a thing to keep in mind as well is that a lot of the romance will probably be subtextual. You know, you talked about the very, like, blooming obvious point with the gun, you know, can I see your gun? Oh shit, he never lets anyone see his gun, you know, that stuff. But
I have to say, if you're gonna make that point, though, like, it is mentioned by Skip that the gun is sawn off at the end, and I'm just like,
I'm not touching that, Shannon.
No, don't touch the gun, please don't touch the gun.
But the other thing that springs to mind is when Agee and Skip are talking, and they're speaking and, you know, speaking very reverently and praising Ash. And sort of you see Aji is kind of flushed and he's complimenting him, and it looks like, okay, this boy is pretty attracted to Ash Lynx. But it's all done under the umbrella of being drunk. He, you know, he never drinks. When he gets served, he's like, what? This is alcohol, you know? And they're like, oh, it's fine, it's fine. So he gets drunk pretty quick.
It's
and
just
so,
a rum.
Of course, it's a rum, just a rum and coke. And so, like, he's, you know, saying things that, like, can be excused the next day as, oh, I was drunk. Like, so I think a lot of this is going to happen. I would expect it to, but I think it's like a product of its time. And this is why, this is why I'm curious, like, how modernized the show will be, because, you know, if you're going to modernize the technology and everything, like, will you go the next step and make the romance much more textual? Then I think you have to start, like, taking apart the story and different scenes in the story and reconstructing them. So, I mean, there's everything is at play. I mean, we just don't know how it will go.
I'm just going to stress here, folks, by the way, just so that you're aware of the perspective that I'm operating on, and this applies to Doc as well. I mean, I wouldn't normally otherwise speak for him, but I just feel like it's appropriate for me to bring it up at this point. We are both cishet. So any statements I'm going to make about, you know, a gay perspective here are entirely, you know, conjecture. There we go. They're entirely conjecture. I'm not going to pretend that I can speak for, you know, someone who is gay, lesbian, bi, etc., etc. I can only speculate on here, so take everything that I'm about to say with a pinch of salt here.
Yeah, we're coming at it from an outsider's perspective in terms of being an outsider to that community, for sure. Very good to keep in mind.
Yeah, it's something that I think is just worth bringing up when we discuss media like this, because certainly we can have a partial understanding of it, but we can never have the full understanding that it otherwise would be. So, all right, with all that out of the way, you are correct in that, you know, there is the modernization of technology, but there are still attitudes that don't quite die out. For example, with Ash, you could read, you know, his behavior as him being, you know, held to a masculine ideal. Like, you know, he's the leader of a gang. He shoots guns at, you know, he exerts his authority, you know, beats people up. That's a very, you know, traditionally masculine construct there. You know, alpha male example. I mean, he's, you know, after all, Ash Lynx, the Wildcat. So he's got a title behind him that does, you know, exude that. Ash Lynx, by the way, I mean, I know
what
Lynx
a great
is actually
name.
A body spray. I know Lynx is a body spray, but I really thought that was, like, you know, going to be the next one. Like, Ash Lynx, the volcanic spray.
By Old
Spice.
Paul
and Paul Fenn. Yeah, exactly. So there is that. And I think that perhaps maybe, and again, I am speculating here, I'm conjecturing because I've never been in those shoes. Not now. Unless something drastic changes, I'm probably never going to be. But who knows? Maybe I'll. Anyway.
Continue.
Technology does march on, but sometimes attitudes do not, particularly, you know, in individual locations. So, I mean, I don't know whether or not this is true of the actual story in terms of, like, what the mangaka knew at the time, but if I'm not mistaken, the 80s were the time of the AIDS crisis in the United States. Was that right?
Gosh, I should know this. Like, it's certainly, I feel like, the 90s. I was hearing about it, you know, because having lived through it, I'm sure it was, you know, like, there was a lot of, like, fear-mongering and stuff like that about it in the 80s. Yeah.
Persecution, you know, and vilification of gay men, particularly in that time because of that. Now, whether or not Banana Fish will ever touch on that, I am doubtful on it, but maybe that factors into the context. That, of course, is not going to be the case here.
Well, they kept the city the same, though. I mean, despite all the modernizing sort of that we've discussed, the setting still looks like 80s New York, and it's fucking rad. And I'm so happy they did that, because I love the way it looks. I love the fact that Shorter has that freaking, like, goddamn dated mohawk. Like, it's
he looks like one of the mobs from Streets of Rage.
He does, yes, or Duck from Fatal Fury, the DJ, and like the fact that someone tweeted about this. I forget who, but the fact that Ash had his flannel shirt tied around his waist while he was like kicking dude's ass in the bar. They're like, this is cool. Welcome back, shirt being tied around the waist.
The classic. You can't fault a classic, mate. I think, you know, fashion is cyclic. It will come round again. So it's actually accurate that it's now back. But to go back to my original point, perhaps that attitude, you know, of things being subtextual because characters can't express it openly is still a thing for, you know, people who are learning that they are, you know, homosexual, that, you know, the gay, bi, lesbian, etc. Maybe that is still a case of people. I mean, I, again, am speaking from someone who's on the outside looking in here. You can insert your own Stained reference here. That's the second crappy 2000s doom metal reference I made in this stream, and I'm going to keep doing it. Just you fucking buckle up, right? Okay, so while Doc is, you know, dying and, you know, his soul is evaporating from his body, the point I was going to make is this, that things have gotten better from what I've seen for, you know, LGBT plus representation, pride, you know, openness, etc., but it's not quite there yet. And certainly in an environment involving criminality, I would imagine that maybe that's still not the case. So with the whole idea of modernization, you know, the technology and stuff, makes sense. Why would, you know, we're not going to see, you know, fucking Ash running around with a pager. They've, you know, they're obviously, they're the Betamax of, you know, instant messaging. They're gone. But maybe the attitudes could still be present in certain places. It's not implausible that people would act that way. That people would, you know, still feel unable to, you know, be open with their own sexuality in that manner. Both for the case for Ash and for Eiji, because bear in mind Eiji comes from Japan, one of the most sexually oppressed countries on the fucking planet. So, I don't know. I'm not going to answer this conclusively because I can't. I don't feel qualified to do so. But it's, to me, at least, it doesn't seem implausible that, you know, maybe the attitudes that are presented here should stay the same, because it might very well be the case that that's true for people living here today. You know,
I expect a high volume of gay boys in this show. I feel like I feel like it's sort of going to be the norm in Banana Fish, which I'm totally I'm totally down for, totally okay with.
Well, can I make a broader point about actually, you know, what it means to be cishet, but watching or reading or engaging with material that is LGBTQ plus?
Just no, you may not.
Well, fuck
don't,
you, I'm going to do
don't
it
ask
anyway.
Me. Yeah, go for it.
All right, so let me explain from my perspective why I think it's important that, you know, or why people who are cishet can still enjoy that material. Because I think the core idea, appropriation of it or not, you might read it, is that, you know, accepting and being proud of your sexuality is being proud of a part of yourself. It's embracing your true identity. And, okay, I'm not even going to pretend that, you know, that's a thing for heterosexual people, that it's difficult for them to be proud of their sexuality, because Jesus Christ, I could point to 1,001 fucking things in modern society, you know, that champion heterosexuality, just like media, you know, advertisements. How many times do you see, like, you know, heterosexual celebrities, like, you know, wearing like boxes and shit? Like, okay, you get my point.
The way the world is designed, we don't need to jettison that into the sun.
Yeah, but that being said, there is still value for reading material and engaging material with this that is about embracing your true nature. That's the core message. So while it is admittedly going to, you know, not quite translate, and also, good God, what are you doing? Right, never mind, anyway. While it is also really not going to, you know, hit as home as much as it would for someone in that situation. I mean, I did read My Lesbian Experience with Loneliness recently, and it was great. I really liked it. But I'm never going to pretend, you know, that it would ever affect me as much as it would, say, you know, someone who was a lesbian who had been in similar suits. Like, I saw some overlaps for sure, but, like, you know, I'm a cishet guy, so I obviously can't be in the same thing. The clue's in the fucking title. So there you go. So that being said, though, I do think, you know, for people who are cishet, engaging in LGBTQ plus material is rewarding, not just for giving you a perspective on a world that you ultimately will never be a part of, because it's still, you know, I mean, Kay from Anime Is Lit. God bless her soul. She's awesome. Out at Anime Expo at the moment. God damn her. How dare she?
So I mean, I'm jealous.
I'm on the inside of the pond. How the fuck do you think I feel? Okay, point being. She actually once said something that stuck with me ever since we did the Devilman Crybaby podcast, which is...
I know what you're going
to
say.
It's not good to treat queerness as being unknowable. It's not helpful. So, material like this, you know, Banana Fish and stuff like, I mean, we'll get a good crime story out of this for sure, but we'll also probably get a damn fine gay romance. And you know what? As a cis-set guy, I'm totally down with that. But the very simple fact that, you know, all stories are about embracing your true identity, embracing what makes you good and happy and whole, they are universal. Won't give me the whole effect, you know, I won't get the full hit of it because of my, you know, makeup as a person, but I can still appreciate that core message. And I think that that's true for everyone.
Totally. Absolutely.
Right, collecting my check now and I'm off later, folks. Yeah,
show's over. All right. Not quite. So now we're going to keep with our tradition and rate the episode out of 5. I, myself, am going to give Banana Fish episode 1. What is it called? Oh, A Perfect Day for Banana Fish. I'm going to give it 4.
Right. I know I need to do.
4 packets of powder acquired from a back alley doctor out of 5. For
nice.
Many, many reasons I've stated that I love. Oh, we didn't even talk about the fantastic battle at the end in much detail, but that was some good
that was
shit,
great.
Man. Like, high intensity.
Kicks into high gear immediately. Like, the moment that kicks off, like, it did not cut stop. And that was fantastic.
I mean, bam, fight, shoot, punch, dodge, escape, kidnapping, like, motorcycle theft. It was fantastic. But that, all the intriguing characters that were set up, the fact that this is not, like, hand-holdy, like, I like shows that kind of keep you on your toes and force you to pay attention and drink them in. And I think Grizz mentioned in chat that watching every episode twice is beneficial, like, for that reason, you know, because you want to see everything that it has to offer and catch everything it has to offer. But I love the art design, the music we didn't talk about. The music, by the way, in the show is by Sexual. No, the music is by Shinichi Osawa. Damn fine stuff throughout. The music, Osawa only has Ninja Slayer, the trigger OVA, or ONA rather, the net animation, on their CV. So
I apologize for showing my bald spot there, folks. I was actually just filling this in so I can show you my story.
Close up!
too close.
And I agree with Mirror here. I hope that they maintain the high bar of animation. There should just, I mean, but even like, even before the fight, right? Like, even just Ash getting into bed or climbing on the motorcycle, like those things, there was a level of fluidity and detail that I really enjoyed watching. And yeah, I hope that they keep the quality up. And I mean, I'm sure that they will have plenty of like talky scenes, lots of drama, intense conversations where there doesn't need to be a lot of time spent on the animation so that they can really like power pack the fight scenes and
nice.
make those good. So let's hear and see what you have with your rating.
Well, there's just gonna be C, no here. Well, I kid. So please excuse the awful handwriting, but I'm gonna give this episode a
a 6 start. I love
it. 6-star, yeah.
I love it.
That's what it is. So, for me, like, when we cover shows like this, when we do the first episode, it's obviously not going to be relevant for me to talk about the long-term game, because it's ultimately going to be speculative for a lot of it. I mean, We did, of course, discuss potential ways in which the story could go, but for meriting this episode on its own, what I tend to look for is how much it hooks me in, because that's the duty and responsibility of any first episode. I mean, you have the free, you know, the free and done rule for anime, but the first episode is the first impression. You've got to hit the ground running. And it's certainly, you know, it actually is the best thing, you know, for it not to be the best episode of the show, because then, of course, it's all downhill. Also, our stream appears to have died. Oh, no, it's back. That's good. Yeah, the video went weird then for some reason. I got some hosting sites.
I'll tell you why. It was because in looking for a certain window, I accidentally started FileZilla, and it was trying to connect to a server. And so I shut that shit down.
Oh, good. We made the joke with James Beckett recently about the whole idea of having an innocuous folder called Accounting Reports or Taxes. So I hope that doesn't pop up on stream for you there, Doc. Don't know what's in that folder. But to the point I was going to make is that, like, the comparison point I made earlier was Yatterman Knight. The podcast we've done that is not out yet. But Yatterman Knight's opening episode basically had everything I could have ever wanted as far as an opening episode goes. This comes close. We have a very strong central mystery. What the fuck is the drug? What did it do to, you know, Griffin? We have, you know, an opening, you know, a planted seed of a romance or a relationship. We have personal stakes. We have just the threat of Dino and the mobsters. There's a lot of different things here. And it ends on a good cliffhanger, like, which is literally that AG and Skip are being driven away to parts unknown to meet a possibly gruesome fate.
By the way, 20's big band, Dino and the Mobsters, visiting local jazz lounge near you.
Nice, nice. So, on top of that, it was just a slickly produced episode all around. The pacing, for me personally, was a bit too fast, but it wasn't a deal breaker for me. So, yeah, a very promising start to this show. Thank God for that. And I'm very interested to see where things go next. And lastly, just little touches again, like, you know, the whole bar thing, you know, Ash being on higher than that. Nice use of direction, camera angles, etc. Like, things that, you know, help give a show and give a story texture and more meaning. They're always, you know, things that I can praise. So, yeah, 3.5 out of 5, solid start. Next week, I'm in for it.
All right, I'm going to check in really briefly on
Twitter poll.
Early voting for the Twitter poll. 71% say that, yes, they do like the pacing of the first episode. 29% agree with you, Shadon, and say no.
Team hashtag Team Shaden, let's go. We can bring it back. Well, just throwing it out there, Doc. Just throwing it out there.
All right, so with that, I think we can wrap this up. it wasn't that much shorter than our usual stream of thought, but that's okay. It was really fun. I hope it was enjoyable for you guys. Let us know how we succeeded or failed, how we could improve.
Yeah, but any feedback is welcome. If, you know, you think that I'm turning into a raging alcoholic by doing it on stream, I'm happy to hear that. Or if you want to talk more about the technical aspects or what we discussed, you know, if things should be shorter, longer, any feedback is welcome. We're always happy to have it as long as it's constructive. But yes, thank you very much to everyone who stuck around for this episode. We're going to make it available after the facts, of course, both as a VOD, and then I think we're also going to then translate it somehow into podcast form so we can put it on there, probably in an unedited format. I mean, it was about the same length as our usual stream of thoughts, but the nice thing is that because we're doing this way, we're also not having to edit it. So I'm not having to spend, like, you know, hours cooped up in front of a monitor, you know, yelling about how much I hated a particular show that we'll not talk about anymore.
I mean, this is a huge reason why I thought it would be a good idea to do this is, I mean, the editing load you've had, you know. I mean, I just did it for 10 episodes with MMO Junkie. You've done it for 24 episodes. I mean, I've filled in once or twice, but you've done, like, you know, we will have done literally 22 of the episodes, and that's a lot of hard work, and I want to give you your free time back. So, yeah.
Hey, don't worry, Zap. It's weird looking at my face in the morning as well. Like, God, you're bald.
Sorry, our faces are weird, Zap.
Oh, it's all right. The last.
No, I know. I know what you mean.
Said that to me as well.
No, I know what you mean. Like, when you've been hearing someone on podcasts for a while. The other day, like, so I listened to The Weeds, it's a political podcast, and I really enjoy hearing Matt Iglesias talk. I saw his Twitter profile picture for the first time. Very weird. Doesn't have a weird face, but it's just weird to see the face of this person that I listen to all the time. Doesn't look like I imagined. So
I mean, poor Doc went to a cop when he saw my face for the first time. He was actually terrified. Scares a cop as dog.
Thanks for watching and listening, everyone, if you're catching a replay. Yeah, this was really great. Shadon, where can people get mad at you for bad banana fish opinions?
They can't. Fuck the lot of you. You ain't doing it. Piss off. No, I kid. You can find me at Shaden1010, that's 1010 on Twitter. You can also hit me up for the usual Wari-Desho Twitter account as well. So do feel free to send, you know, thoughts and such my way. In fact, because I'm nice like that, and because I have a keyboard here. Oh,
something's happening.
That's just,
typing.
That's the thing. It turns out that YouTube will not let you post web addresses in chat. Thanks, YouTube.
Oh, it let me do it because I'm the admin. I put the Twitter poll link in there. Do you want me to post something?
If you just post links to my Twitter and also, you know, release your stranglehold on the, you know, when did you become a stream dictator, man? This ain't fair.
We must maintain order above all else.
Not with me around.
If there's not order. We have chaos.
Which I'm down
remember
with.
Remember it.
But yeah, feel free to hit me up on there if you ever want to chat about anything whatsoever. I'm always happy to, you know, shoot the breeze. But yeah, I will also echo Doc's comment here to thank everyone for joining us with this inaugural episode of Stream of Thought Season 3, where live, unfiltered, nonsensical, the best kind of way to be. So thank you all very much for joining us. No. I saw that hand gesture there.
Well, my own self-effacing humor aside, I did enjoy this.
Oh, I've got to play that myself.
Thank you so much, everyone. My own Twitter, if you want to bother me about Banana Fish or other anime or, you know, video games, visual novels, hip-hop, Japanese professional wrestling, is at the Subtle Doctor. Please reach out, and you see on stream there the link to the Wari-Desho Twitter, SoundCloud, and email box if you want to follow us in other places, see our stuff, or get in contact with us. I am gonna let Michael Kelly play us out here. I forgot to play his music at the beginning, but
TV problems, Rory Page, it's good.
Yeah, we'll remember next time, but for now, embrace each other, everyone, to the ends of the universe.
Good night, everyone.